It is great to be learning again. The topic of today's shir is the importance of falling on one's face. Now, I know that sounded a little bit like a slapstick comedy. You know, the guy walks through the garden, hits the garden rake, you know, and then he puts his foot into the pothole, and that's the end of the show, and everybody thinks it's hilarious. But it actually happens to be that this is a very important part of our Jewish experience, is falling on our faces. And we're going to explore a little bit of this lesser-known part of our daily routine, which is falling on our faces. Why is it related to now? Because this week's parasha talks about the importance of falling on one's face. We're learning this week, we're going to be entering the parasha of Korach, and there's a fascinating episode which happens amidst the more famous story of Korach, in which this plays an important role. So here we go. We're told the following, that Hashem is about to destroy all of Korach and his followers wholesale. And the Torah says, "Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe vel Aaron lemor, hibodlu mitoich ha'idah hazois va'achale oisam karaga." And Hashem says, "Remove yourselves, Moses and Aaron, from this group, because they're going to be, this is it, finished. They're gone. I'm going to destroy them all." And Moshe and Aaron, realizing that once destruction is released, it's going to destroy everybody, wholesale. No, there's not going to be any distinctions made. They respond, "Vayiplu al pneihem, vayamru, kel Elokei haruchos lechol basar." God, the judge of all spirits, "Ha'ish echad yechtov al kol ha'idah tiktzav." Are you going to persecute? Are you going to prosecute in this case the whole congregation, when ultimately how many people sinned? There was only one person. There were a few maybe individuals who are culpable in this case. Why are you releasing the destruction to the entire community? And it's interesting because Moshe and Aaron were actually the people who were really they were the brunt of this whole discussion. Meaning they were being accused by Korach and his followers of usurping, nepotism, all the things. Nonetheless, they were there. They still stood in the hole of the dam trying to stop the destruction flowing off to the rest of the people. You see an incredible amount of self-sacrifice in this argument they make. Nonetheless, the way it's described, how is it that they made their plea to Hashem, is vayiplu al pneihem, they fell on their faces. This is obviously not talking about an accident, this is talking about a way of interacting with God, a particular, we'll call it, portal of access to God, which is via prostrating or by lying down, so to speak, in front of God, which is why Rabbeinu Bachaye famously says at the very bottom of this sheet on source 2, "Vayiplu al pneihem lispalel," means to daven, "mikan lenefilas apayim betfila." This is our source that we fall upon our faces, or the section of tefillah called nefilas apayim, in our tefillah service. That's where we get this from. Now, what is nefilas apayim? So I used to assume that everybody is on the same page, but I thought maybe just for the sake of clarity and for the sake of transparency, let us recap what Nefilas Apayim is. Nefilas Apayim is a section in the davening which immediately follows our Amida, the Chazaras Hashatz, at Shachris Ered Mincha, and I just put the art scroll picture of this section in the middle part of this page. There are three columns. On the rightmost column there's a little section which says towards the middle of the column which says Nefilas Apayim, starting with Vayomer David El Gad. So that's the first section of Nefilas Apayim, of falling on one's face. That first section, up till the emboldened Hashem Elokei Yisrael, is said, generally sitting down, leaning over. The next section is on the next column on the left, Shomer Yisrael, which is those four lines are said sitting. And then finally, we have on the bottom right of this page is Vayanachnu Lo Neda. That's the basic framework of Tachanun. Is those three sections, Vayomer David El Gad, then Shomer Yisrael, and then Vayanachnu Lo Neda. That's regular, Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Tachanun. And on Monday and Thursday, we're going to see why we add a whole section beforehand, Vuhu Rachum. And of course, this is going according to Ashkenazi tradition. In Sephardic tradition, it's a little bit different. So in Sephardic tradition, the order is a little bit switched, and the Vuhu Rachum section is a lot shorter, actually. So, nonetheless, this is what it is, and there's a lot of value to this. We're going to see what the value is to doing this. So, this is just before we start. You know, you have to imagine, by the way, what it must be like to be a person who doesn't know how this works. and to be in shul. It can be quite confusing. You know, everybody's standing for a while or sitting, and then suddenly everybody sits down. They don't just sit down, they still look like they've lost a contact lens on the floor. You know, so it can be quite confusing as to, you know, what these Jews are doing. So let's try to understand what the Jews are doing. Right? Where are we coming from? What is the whole point of this business? So let's try to take a step backwards. Apparently, let's just from the source that we have over here in the Torah, what is the tone of this supplication that Moshe and Aaron are presenting to Hashem? What is the feelings that are coursing through their veins as they say this? If you think about this, there's a sense of despair. There's a sense of maybe tshuva. Tshuva is, it's hard to say teshuva because it's not them really, right? They're sort of putting themselves in front of the moving train for the people behind them, right?
They're pleading for rachamim.
But there's real plea. There's despair. What was that?
Rachamim.
There's a begging for mercy. But in terms, that's what they're asking for. But in terms of what they're feeling, there's a sense of desperation. There's a sense of real plea. You can imagine this is a moving locomotive, right? The people behind them stand to be completely wiped out if they don't stand in the way. There's a real sense of desperation. And so somehow in the Filas Apai, in this section in Davening of Tachanun, it relates to those types of feelings in our lives as well. We can see how that's going to be used. Now, you know that they say the three things that Jews are most scared about are becoming fleshek, washing for Birkas Hamazon, and Tachanun, right? So, these are the things that Jews are most terrified of. So we have to understand why actually this is very important in our daily service and how it works. So let's start at the very beginning.
Why do we skip those four paragraphs?
Oh yes, and so in the middle, so Mr. Price is making a good point. We actually, in between Vayomer David El Gad and Shom Yisrael, there are a number of paragraphs. And there's a refrain, which is Hashem, please don't destroy your people. We're going to see why. Those are added in on a Monday and Thursday. We're going to have to see why Monday and Thursday has a greater intensity than a regular day. Right? So the default seems to be a certain level, and apparently we drop into a more intense supplication on Monday and Thursday. We're going to see why that is, what's special about Monday and Thursday. Nonetheless, we're going to leave the rest of the Rabbeinu Bechaya for a section to enter into one episode which occurs in the times of the Gemara, which is astounding. Really an astounding episode. And we're going to read this the end of the story. Most of us know the beginning of the story. Most of us don't know the end of the story. So this is the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Nun Tesama Beis, in which it recounts the famous story of the Machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. Rabbi Eliezer, this is about what's famously known as the Tanur Shel Achnai. There's this complicated structure, this stove, which is made of earthenware, which can be reconstituted and held together through dust. And the question is it considered broken and reconstituted to lose its tumah or not? Complicated halachic shaleh. What's interesting about the Gemara as a whole is that there's this, you know, unbelievable showdown between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. And Rabbi Eliezer is so confident of his position that he calls upon miraculous events to happen. The stream flows backwards and the tree moves and the walls fall and the whole business. And finally, he's outvoted and the Gemara famously ends, Loi b'shamayim hi Hashem, gives us the ultimate power of legislation, and that's where the Gemara ends. It turns out the Gemara doesn't end there. The Gemara continues to say that Rabbi Eliezer, because he was not willing to commit to the opinion of the Chachamim, was put into Cherem. Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, the teacher of Rabbi Akiva, was put into Cherem as a function of his dispute and his continued dispute after the vote. The Gemara tells us the following. So we're going to take a look at source 3. This is the Gemara. I put the translation with thanks to Safari on the left, with the bolded parts, the direct translation. But let's learn this Gemara just as with fresh eyes. Ashkecha Rabbi Nason le'Eliyahu. Rabbi Nason found Rabbi Eliyahu. Amalei, my Ovid kud shabrichu by Yishaisa. What is Hashem doing at this point in time? Amalei, kochayich v'omar nitzchuni banai, amru. And Hashem was laughing at this time, so to speak, that my children overpowered my judgment, which Rabbi Eliezer was representing. Amru, oisa yom heviu kol taros shetir Rabbi Eliezer v'sorfum ba'esh. All the items which Rabbi Eliezer had given the psak that would be pure, because he was outvoted now, would be burnt. Rad v'nimnu alav b'birku, and they voted to put him into a cherem because he was still holding on to his opinion. Va'amru miyelech v'yodiyai. Who's going to tell Rabbi Eliezer that he's been put into cherem? I mean, Rabbi Eliezer was not just anyone. Rabbi Eliezer was the Gadol Hadar. So who's going to tell him? Amar lahem Rabbi Akiva, ani yelech shema yelech adam she'eino hagun v'yodiyai v'nimtza machriv es kol ha'olam kulai. Rabbi Akiva says, I need to be the one to go because should I tell somebody else who's not fitting, tell him in an inappropriate way, the whole world will be destroyed. In his response, Ma'as Rabbi Akiva, what did Rabbi Akiva do? Lavash shecharim, v'nis'atev shecharim, v'yashav lefonov berichuk arba amos. So he went in dark clothes, he covered his face, and he sat in distance of four amos, which are all the nihugim, these are all the behavior of treating somebody who's in cherem. Right, you don't come close to them. You're not as involved with them in society. So his teacher said to him, Rabbi Akiva, what's different today? It seems that people are avoiding you. He himself realized he was in cherem. He tore kriya, sat on the ground. Zolgul einov demois. And he cried, and as he cried, there was the plagues hit the world in different areas of agriculture because of the pain that he was experiencing. This is how powerful a human being he was. Even the dough all fell at that moment in time. Now, by the way, just as an interesting footnote over here, just before we get to the next section, just the relationship of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol was incredibly tight, an incredibly close and relationship of a Talmud and a Rav. Rabbi Akiva wasn't able to access his Rebbe fully after this point in time. He wasn't able to learn from him in the same way. And they talk about when Rabbi Eliezer died, he died in cherem. He talks about how Rabbi Eliezer puts out his two arms and says these two arms are like Sifrei Torah, and nobody's able to read them, meaning to say he wasn't able to teach for the rest of his life. Rabbi Akiva pulled out hair when Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol died and felt that he'd missed an opportunity over here of learning from him. Very, very sad, end of the story. And at this point in time, this is where it gets very fascinating for us. Here we go. Tano, af gadol hoya ba'osa yom shebechol yom bechol makom nasan ba'enov Rabbi Eliezer Nisraf. When he'd look around, everything that he looked at burnt. Vav Raman Gamliel hoya bob b'svino amad olav nichshol v'letavoy. So Rabban Gamliel, one of the heads of the Sanhedrin, the Nasi at this time, was in a boat, and there was a wave which was going to destroy him. It's because of Rabbi Eliezer that we put into cherem. This is the power Rabbi Eliezer had. Rabban Gamliel says, I only put him into cherem as the Nasi because I didn't want there to be continued disputes. I didn't do this for any personal vendetta. Hashem, save me. Nocha yom izaf on the sea where it rested. Now here's how it relates to Tachanun. Ima shalom, dvito de Rabbi Eliezer, ach se de Rabban Gamliel havai. So it happens to be that his wife, Rabbi Eliezer's wife, her name was Ima Shalom, she was the sister of Rabban Gamliel, the head of the Sanhedrin, who was the Nasi, who put him into cherem. She wouldn't allow her husband, Rabbi Eliezer, to ever put his head down. She wouldn't allow him to prostrate himself in tefillah there afterwards. Why? What's going on? Why is she doing that? She's protecting her brother, right? Because she knows the power of the pain that Rabbi Eliezer is going through, and she knows that her brother was the one who actually put him into cherem, so should he be allowed to do nefilah sapayim, it may affect her brother. So, hahu yoma resh yarcho hava, v'ichlif la bein mala lechaser. It happened to be Rosh Chodesh. She didn't know at the time their calendar wasn't based on opening the Ezra Satorah Luach or the numerous calendars we get in our mail around September time. She had to actually know when Rosh Chodesh was. What was that? She got mixed up whether it was a full or not full month, whether it was 1 or 2 days. Or maybe there was somebody who rang at the door. There was a poor person she went to deal with. She came to bring him bread. And then before she knew it, he was doing tachanon. Kum kartilas la'achi. She says, get up, or you've killed my brother. Adahachi nofek shipura mi beis Ramon Gamliel to shachiv. At that point in time, it was too late. The news went out that Ramon Gamliel had died. Meaning to say, the moment that he put his head down, Ramon Gamliel died. Now, he wasn't, let's get this clear. Rabbi Eliezer was not talking about Ramon Gamliel. He wasn't talking about his brother-in-law. What he was when he put his head down, this was his moment to express to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his private little place, to express the anguish that he was feeling. But that anguish had import. That's what the Gemara is telling us over here. And she was trying to stop that import. A terrifying moment over here. We know this, by the way. The Torah tells us this explicitly. There are certain people whose pain matters a lot more to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than others. Like, for instance, the Torah tells us that when it comes to an almana and a yasam, when a person who is a widow, or children, or orphans, we have to be very careful. Because if a person in calls out in pain, their pain means a lot to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem is very, very close to them. And we're about Rabbi Eliezer over here. When Rabbi Eliezer cried out, he wasn't talking about Ramon Gamliel, but the pain that he felt affected the people who put him into Cherem, even though it was done for the right purposes. And the Gemara concludes by saying that there was a Kabbalah, there was a tradition, Kol HaShorim Ninolo Chutz Mishari Anol. All the gates were closed, except for the gates of pain. And this is really what Rabbi Eliezer was experiencing. So we see the tremendous power that Tachanun has. This is an example of what was happening. Now, this Gemara tells us a lot of things about Tachanun. Number one, there's a practical problem with this story. And that is it doesn't make so much sense that by the way, just as a footnote to this is why, but this is for us, for all of us, before Kriya Shema LaMitzah, at night, before the bracha in the Siddur, and there's a little Ribbono Shel Olam which we say over there, which is, please, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm releasing all people who hurt me today. You know, I don't let anybody be punished on my behalf. It's worthwhile, it may not be every day necessarily, but it's worthwhile, at points in time, we have all been affronted and hurt by people. But it, God forbid, should anybody suffer for our pain. So let's you know, it's important before Kriya Shema LaMitzah, release. It hurts to carry pain, but it doesn't only hurt us. It hurts others as well in the spiritual realm. So it's important just to release as well, especially before in the Yomim Noraim, to say that Ribbono Shel Olam, please don't let anybody be punished on my behalf, even though they may have caused me pain. So that's just this relating to this Gemara. But the practical question of this Gemara over here is that, how is it possible that his wife was sitting there the entire time, every waking moment, and not allowing him to put his head down? I mean, you know, like, you know, what would happen? He needed to go to the barbershop. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, like, how could she be with him all the time? So this is what the Mepharshim say or ask, and they say a very practical answer. Okay, so maybe it's only what's no. So Tachanun can work outside the realm of davening, but he has the kick, and this helps us la'alocha. Ritva says, take a look in source 4. He asked, we know husbands and wives enjoy being with each other, and they go shopping together, but there's a limit, right? How could it be that she's with him the whole time? Mikan meviraya Rabbeinu, he quotes Rabbeinu, which is actually attributed in the Beis Yosef to the Talmidei HaRashba, in Spain. So the Ritva is quoting the Talmid Rashba, she'asur lahafsik besicha udvarim acherem she'enom shotvila bein tvila lenefilas apayim. You cannot interrupt between the Shmona Esrei and Tachanun with any other conversation. So what was she doing? She wasn't with him all day necessarily. What was she doing? She was making sure that immediately when he finished his Shmona Esrei, he wouldn't go into Tachanun. He may have done Tachanun, but he wasn't doing Tachanun as a follow-off of his tvila. That's what she had done. One day she didn't make that interruption, which shows us an interesting thing, la halacha. If you're asking yourselves, what is Tachanun? Is Tachanun an independent prayer, or is it a continued prayer? It sounds like from this Gemara that it is a continued prayer, meaning it is an overflow of what the Shmona Esrei was, and therefore it can be diffused, the power of it can be diffused by talking. Right, folks? It's very easy to lose it. It's very easy to lose the power of the Tachanun by an interruption. That's what Ima Shalom was teaching us. So this is what the Ritva tells us. La halacha paskin din Shulchan Aruch, source 6. One shouldn't be conversing between Tefillah and Tachanun. The Mishnah Berurah adds on, of course, in source 7, Mihu im avar v'diber pshita d'tzarech lipol al parav. Okay, you spoke, you still do Tachanun. Okay, don't get the wrong idea here. I remember there was a fellow I was once with, and he was talking about whether you can catch up Pesukei D'Zimra or not. There's a whole machlokes, can you catch up Pesukei D'Zimra? And so he used to always saunter into davening, you know, 12 minutes late, and say, my Rebbe had a tradition that you can never catch up Tachanun, and you'd be terrified. I was like, yeah, but he would never miss it either, you know. You know, like you can't play both sides of this game. So he says, yes, you diffuse a little bit of the power of it, but you still need to do it. And he says, Mutal yispal b'makom ach echad v'lipol b'makom acher v'ein v'ach lo shelo yafsit b'emtza. It is possible to do it in a different place, the Tachanun, but one shouldn't have any interruptions between them. So we see that the power of it is actually, in a certain sense, the buildup of energy that's been through the Shemona Esrei, privately and communally, the two parts of the Shemona Esrei, which flow into the Tachanun. So this is stage number one. What is it? It sounds like it's a continuation. Now, happens to be, there are lots of disputes today about, so how do you do it? You know, so practically speaking, Tachlis, what do you do? Right? What does it look like? How is it supposed to be done? Again, like if we put ourselves in the position of somebody who is just visiting a Orthodox synagogue for the first time in their lives, and you're trying to explain to, you know, you're trying to explain to them, and you know, you can imagine how difficult it is in right hand, left hand, sitting, not sitting, standing. It's a very confusing part of the tefillah at this point in time. So what's going on? This is the question that was that was asked many centuries ago to the Rivash. The Rivash is one of the later Rishonim, and he has many responses into which he answers questions from all over the diaspora. And his question was the following: Sha'alta imutar hayachid lipol alponov mu'umad, or imisarech leishev. Let's say an individual, not the Baal Tzvila. Does he need to stand? Does he need to sit? Kederech atzibor shiyoshvim, because everybody else. Sorry, when he's by himself, because the tzibor is sitting. V'kach atzibor ma'atam shem yoshvim. Why do people sit? It's not clear from the Gemara that a person needs to be sitting during Tachanun. At this point in time, you can see there's a little bit of flux as to how it was done, right? At this point in time, we're talking about in the 1400s. So he responds by saying, Tshuva, davazer shel nefilas apayim, eina choyvas ha-tfila, elo shoya minag gam bimei razal. He says it's a minag, first of all. It is a developed custom which is now concretized into halacha. Kamoshe muska b'sefer peperek achron de Megillah, he quotes the Gemara in Megillah. Now, we're going to skip the two Gemaras to the first underline. V'aval pi she hakavona shom shoyso lakachas oyso bidvorim acho Rebbe Eliezer shochech milipol alponov. Even in the Gemara in Bava Metzia we just saw that she would have a discussion with him so you'd forget to go fall in his face. Mikomokam im hoya choyva hoya zoriz v'nizkar bo v'lo hoya shochecha b'chol yom. If it was a choyva, he wouldn't have allowed himself to get distracted. So clearly you see, even in his mind, it wasn't a direct chiyuv. V'liyos zerushus, and being as it is, it started off, remember we're talking at the time of the Gemara, is that it started off as something which is permissible. Uminag ba'alma, lozei yesh yomim shenagim bohem iksas mekomas benefilas apayim, umiksas nekoma shelo nahagu kain. And that's why we already see the development of some places that do Tachanun on certain days, and some places which don't do Tachanun on certain days, because it was a developed minag, and each community developed it in a different way. Kegoyen b'chanukah b'purim, And he talks about the, different examples. And at the end of this paragraph, he says, "Nara, nara, upashte." Each river has its own trajectory. Meaning to say, we know that the different minhagim developed for certain reasons. So already, when we see over here, there's a certain flux in the creation of this, or in the minhagim of it, based on the fact that it wasn't a choyva satvila; it was a minhag which had developed afterwards. And another example of how this applies itself, lahalachi, he says, "Vakakos of Arav Rebbe Yitzchak Ben Gaius Zal." Bilchasa b'shem Rav Sar Shalom Zal Nefilas apayim rishus v'liyos kein davar kein ein tzarich ledakdek im efshar mu'umad. You don't have to stand for it. Umash enoga atzibur miyushav ulefi shederach atzibur b'chol tfilosem mebrikosem la'omra miyushav shlo latriach alehem. So he says the minag is developed as sitting because that it's not at the same degree as the Shemona Esrei itself. So when we speak to the Rivash, and we speak to the way he's talking about it, he views it as something which is a little bit more in flux at this point in time. And because of that, there's minagim, when to say, when to not to say it, what position to say it, isn't 100% incandescently clear at this point in time from his perspective. However, when you move laterally to Spain and to Fustat, you ask the Rambam feels that it's actually very much a chiyuv. And there, as we see, there are different minhagim. How does it develop today? Meaning, what do we do today? There's disputes as to standing, to sitting, to right, to left. How does this all work? So the halacha today is the following: is that we actually sit for the Nifras HaPayim, as the Shulchan Aruch says. But there's different sections. The first section of Vayomer David is said sitting, leaning over. The second section is said sitting, and the third section. That's Shomer Yisrael. The third section is said standing. And in a certain sense, actually, it is what the Sifrei Halacha actually say about this, is that we stand in the middle of the first line of the last section. So we say the following: V'anachnu loy neida ma na'aseh, we don't know what to do, ki alecho aneinu, because our eyes are upon you. As we say that statement, we stand up. Which means to say, we've essentially covered the three positions of supplication: falling on our faces, sitting, and standing. And we finish that by saying, we don't know what to do. Meaning to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we need you. But we don't know how to express that. So you know what we do is, as we describe it, we don't know what to do. That's when we have finished all three positions when relating to Hashem. Okay, so that's the culmination of it's a little bit of a compromise in terms of the halachic positions, but it's not so much of a compromise as to our trying to gauge every different vehicle of coming close to Hashem in Tachanun. Similarly, the discussion about left, right, so which side you should fall upon, happens to be dependent Kabbalistically on the fact that the Shekhinah is usually found on the right-hand side of an individual. So should you be facing it, or should you be alongside it, is the question that's at hand. And the minhag which is developed, which we're familiar with, is for those who are right-handed men, and shachris, who therefore have their tefillin on their left hand, we don't do tachanun on the actual left hand, it's down on the right hand, so as in respect to the tefillin. But in the afternoon, it comes back to the left, which is the default, facing the Shekhinah. That's the way it is done. Should a person be wearing tefillin? Now, there is also an important point which applies itself over here, is that when one does tachanun, it should not be directly on one's skin. Okay, so in the summer, this becomes more interesting. So that means to say that you should have something there between one's forehead and the actual skin. So whether it means you take a tissue, whether it's your watch, which is being worn on the other arm, one or a sleeve, one's own skin is, one can't put one's hand or anything else, that's not considered a interruption. This is in terms of the actual way that one behaves during the tachanun itself. Now, happens to be there are a few other very fascinating details. We want to deal with three more details, and then we'll get to a little bit of the meaning. We're going to deal with venue, nighttime, and then we're going to deal with Mondays and Thursdays. So let's talk about the venue over here. Where can you say tachanun? So you say, well, tachanun, that doesn't sound place dependent, right? Where the Gemara doesn't sound like Rabbi Eliezer. We're checking where Rabbi Eliezer was davening, right? That doesn't seem like we know too much about that. However, there is an element of place dependence, and that is based on the pasuk in Yehoshua. Numerous times across Tanakh, we'll find that people actually did prostrate themselves in front of Hashem as their way of eliciting rachamim. So here we have it, in the only calamity, really, essentially, the only real serious calamity which befalls Sefer Yehoshua is the second battle that Israel takes part in against the city of Ha'ai. It's not Ai, it's Ha'ai is the name of the city. And they fight against the city, and they because one of the members of Israel took from the Cherem, from the spoils of Jericho, there was meant to say that their battle was weakened when they fought Ha'ai. They lost troops in their second battle in the land of Israel. And Yehoshua's response is the following in source 13. Vayikra Yehoshua Simloisov. Yehoshua tore his clothes. It's interesting, he didn't tweet that it was somebody else's problem. He actually took responsibility for the problem that was occurring on the battlefield. Vayipol aponov artzol lifnei Aron Hashem ad ha'arev. And he prostrated himself in front of the ark until the evening. They put a dust on their faces. When calamity hits, the first place to look is the mirror. And that's what Yeshua is doing over here. He believes that he knows that there's something that was wrong. And by the way, he was blamed. Even though it was somebody in the community who took from the cherem, he was blamed because he put the cherem there in the first place. And maybe he should have been more careful about putting a cherem on a community when he felt that people might have not been able to all sustain that cherem. So he was correct in taking responsibility for this, which is a terrifying thought when it comes to communal leadership and regulations, which he was trying to regulate a community. But nonetheless,
Kriya too here.
And he does Kriya as well.
In Shlach, when we're at them, Yeshua and Caleb do Kriya, and only Moshe Baharin does Rafael.
You're right, that's a very good
discussion on that.
Right, 100%. So there's a different way of doing it over here. Here, of course, there was death, which is part of the reason why it was Kriya. Nonetheless, we learn from this a very interesting thing. We are in the source 14, the Beis Yosef. This is the proto Shulchan Aruch. Rav Yosef Karo, before he writes the Shulchan Aruch, in his glosses on the tour on the four sections of Halacha, he notes, quoting the Rokeach, v'siman shin chav dalet, a Kabbalistic sefer, ein noflin ela lifnei sefer Torah. V'siman l'davar tichsiv milchemes ha'ai v'yipol alpon of arzo where lifnei Aron Hashem. He says, I'm not sure if it's a tradition or it's a logical extrapolation. He says, if it is a tradition, I'm very much going to accept this, says the Rav Yosef Karo, that based on the fact that Yeshua could have done his Nefilah Sapaim anywhere, but he did it in front of the Aron Hashem, that means to say that Nefilah Sapaim, when you only put our heads down when there is an ark, when there's actually an Aron. This is commented on by the Darkei Moshe, Rav Moshe Islis. Now remember, this is interesting. The story goes that Rav Yosef Karo was essentially making his comments on the tour and was turning it into his book called, which was going to be the Shulchan Aruch, which was going to unify all of Israel under one halachic rubric. At the same time in Europe, there was a person called Rav Moshe Islis doing the same thing. And as opposed to publishing his own book of halacha, which would have divided Europe and Israel, or the Ottoman Empire at this point in time, he actually wrote his book as glosses on the Shulchan Aruch as Ramah. But it happens to be that both of them commented on the tour. So the Rav Yosef Karo wrote his comments in the Beis Yosef for his first name, and the Rav Moshe Islis wrote his comments on the tour under his name, which was the Darkei Moshe, Rav Moshe Islis. So his comment on the same section of Shulchan Aruch is, quoting the Ashkenazi poskim that the Beis Yosef did not usually quote, he quotes the Maharil in source 15. Kosov bechotzer beis akneses im beis akneses pasuach havi kilifnei ha'aron umachase ponov betchina kilo hayolifnei ha'aron. So what happens if you have, let's say you can imagine, you know, a shtiblach where there's rooms, right? And one room is the aron, but it opens up into another room which doesn't have an aron, and you only have space in the outside room, the antechamber. So he says, because you're just in front of it, you can still see the aron, you still put your faces down. Aval ima yo beis kneses sagur, if you're in the same building, but you're not in the room that you can actually access visually the aron, then in that case, mispadal betchina begilui, ki ilu hoya bebeisoi. You would daven without putting one's face down, because as if you were in one's house. Ad kan lashon. V'chein amina, kish mispadal b'mokum deleka sefer Torah, oimrim tchina beloi kisu ponim. He says, the halacha is that when you don't have a Torah present, you don't put your face down if you're not within visual access of that. And this happens all the time. We're on a trip, you're traveling somewhere, if you don't have a Sefer Torah, you say the words of Tachanun, but you don't say Tachanun putting one's face down, actually, because it's only in the presence. Where do we learn this from, Yoshua? Mr. Price.
How come if you have a face on, there's a Sefer Torah there, we don't say Tachanun?
Ah, so it happens to be, we're going to get to the base of El in just a second. There are certain places, there are certain precincts within which we don't say Tachanun for a different reason. But you're right, it is necessary. This happens to be, if a person has a personal Sefer Torah in their house, one would still say, b'yechidus tachron, putting one's head down. That is true. Beis Avos is a separate reason. Barbara.
There are certain shuls where the women's bechita totally blocks their view. Does that mean
they don't put their head down? I believe that it would still be considered the chatzer beis haknesses, meaning it's not considered a separate room altogether. I mean, if you're going to, you know, where you look through the slats of the in the floor, you know, that type of women's section, then I would, yes, then definitely, but I would imagine even sometimes without visual access, it's still considered part of the same the continuum, yeah.
No Sefer Torah, standing or sitting?
Oh, one would sit. One would sit for the first section. For the first two.
What if you're in communion and there's like no chairs?
Like later.
Never been there. No, but you know. If one's supposed to sit, if one's able to. Of course, you know, if you're at the Kotel and you know, and people are guarding them with their lives, you know, there's not much you can do. But yes, that's what it is. Now, what about night time? Can you say Tachanun at night? We say Shacharis and Mincha. Why not Maariv? Because everybody's got, it's been a long day. No, that's not the reason. The reason is because, as the Shulchan Aruch paskens, the Beis Yosef quotes Rabbeinu Agadu Mari Abuhav. He quotes the Mari Abuhav, who says B'shem Sefer Tzororos, which is a Kabbalistic Sefer. Balayla Ein. This is in Source 16. Balayla Ein Ba Nefilas Apayim. There is no Tachanun at night. Va'inyan Shekain Mekubal Lachachomim Ki Nefilas Apayim. Remez lemidas halayla, ve'noflim palpaneim, and it is when one does tachnun, it is the same characteristics as nighttime. What does that mean? What's he trying to say over here?
Din
means to say that at the first quadrant of the day, which is night, the first 6 hours of the day is a time of din, of more specific judgment, which is why we don't offer supplications. Tachnun itself, says the Beis Yosef, is also an element of din. A person is putting oneself to a self-judging process. We don't combine the two. We don't put the two together. La halacha, by the way, this matters. So you know when sometimes you're down to the T when it comes down to mincha, you know, and you get a minute in the last minute, you have to check. Because if you pass shkia, the halacha, the accepted halacha is today, is once you pass shkia, you may still for a few minutes be able to daven the amida, but you can't do tachanun after shkia. Because once you enter into Shkia, that's the generally accepted minhag. So it's important to check. Sometimes when mincha is running late, that's when this applies itself. Because we don't evoke midas adin at night. I don't know how to answer that question. What about Monday and Thursday, folks? Let's plow forward because there's a few things that I just want to make sure to hit quickly. Mondays and Thursdays, we know that there's a much longer extended Tachanun. We have all the paragraphs of Vuhu Rachum. I've yet still to meet a Baalei Tefillah who can really say all those words in the amount of time that we do them. But nonetheless, there we go, advertisement. So it happens to be that we extend it, and as you know, we also add in the sections in the middle between Vayomer David El Gad to the Shomer Yisrael. Now if you read those and you take a few moments, they're incredibly powerful. Mm-hmm. They're incredible. You know, Habet Mishamayim Ure'ei Kiyah, you know, La'agvo Keres Ba'goyim, Hashem, look, we've been like lambs to the slaughter throughout history. Please, Hashem, don't forget us. Habet Mishamayim Ure'ei Hashem. You know, this is very, very heavy stuff. Where did that come from? There are two parallel stories which are running around, which are in the early Rishonim, in the Sifrei Halacha. One of them is the following story. We're not going to read it inside. It's actually in Aramaic, as quoted by the Kolboy. One of the Sifrei Halacha on the Siddur, or on many aspects of ritual service. And he talks about, we're not going to go through it now just because it's, just for the sake of time, but he talks about how at the time of the destruction of the Roman, the destruction created by the Roman Empire, there was a ship of Jews that was set forth in the sea, and they arrived at a particular port, a safe haven, and the governor of this town asked where they were from, found out that they were Jews, and he said, I'm going to put you to the test of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Now, anybody familiar with what kind of test that is? It's not the regular, you know, it's not the regular hazing, if you know what I'm saying. So they said, we're going to, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were thrown into the furnace of fire. Right? So they said, we're going to do the same experiment. So they requested a number of days. They asked for 30 days to respond to his demands, and in the meantime they all sat in fasting. And towards the end of the time, there was an individual, an elderly man, who came forward. He wasn't a particularly learned individual; he was a very pious individual. And he said he had a dream, and his dream he told the chachamim of this gathering. He said that in his dream he had a verse appeared that had two keys and three loaves. Right, so he didn't know what the pasuk was. But there was a pasuk which appeared, which had two keys and three loaves. Anybody?
Three what?
Two. The word key appeared two times. Kaf yod, and three loaves. Nose appeared. Anybody?
Yes.
Okay, I'm not going to put anybody to the test right now. The chachamim realized that the pasuk that he was talking about was. Here we are. Let's actually look at it inside. We're in source 20, on page 5. About seven lines in, the first word on the line is ki. This is the pasuk that realized that it must have been given to him in a dream. Ki sa'avor b'mayim itoch ani. When you go through water, I am with you. Uva'anarois lo yishtafucha. And when you go through the rivers, I will not drown you. Ki teilech b'moy esh. When you go through fire, lo yisichave. Ve'lehova lo yisivar boch. And when you go through the kiln, I won't allow you to burn. So you see there's three lies and two keys in that pasuk. And they realized that this man had been given the key. Right, the key as in K-E-Y, to survive this. And they said to him, you should be the one. And he went into the fire, and they talked about as they set the pyre alight for him to enter, the pyre divided into three columns. And each of the columns started of fire said released a certain pasuk. Right, and they say that each of the columns were Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, who were sort of welcoming this individual to be safe to the fire, and each one of them said the pasuk of one of who rachum on a melech rachum v'chanon. One said en kamoicha, and the other one continued the rest of the sections of supplication. And the kolboy continues by saying, on days of din are the days when we say this extra supplication, when there was a protection offered for a person in a very difficult time. So why are Monday and Thursday days of judgment in general? Those are generally the days that people come to the main town for the marketplace and the Beis Din would sit. But that is an outgrowth of the fact that actually Moshe Rabbeinu, when he returned to Har Sinai, when he returned to get the second Nuchos, went up on a Thursday and came down on a Monday. And those are days which were intense judgment, because that was the time where we had to rectify our existence ultimately. And so those are the days which were given, those times where we evoke those prayers, where we are offered the protection of from destruction, based on the story. There's another story which is along similar lines, and we add this. It is a pity, unfortunately, that we don't take full advantage of this, because there's a tremendous amount of, unfortunately, if we look around the world, there's a tremendous amount of suffering in the Jewish community all around the world. If you're like, you know, there's a funeral last night for Hadass Malka, 23-year-old policewoman. You know, the only thing that ISIS in Iran can ever agree with is killing Jews, right? Yeah, unfortunately. You know, there's so many situations we need to evoke the Tachanun when we go, and this is the time, especially on Mondays and Thursdays, where we think about this. Now, when it comes to just one or two extra details, when it comes to the days we don't say Tachanun, the Shulchan Aruch goes through them, and it talks about how, you know, there's certain communal days, Purim, Chanukah, Tuba Av, which we don't say Tachanun on. And you can learn that in the Shulchan Aruch itself. It's Beferush in Kisim and Kuflam and Aleph Sev Vav. The Shulchan Aruch also talks about circumstantial days we don't say Tachanun. So, for instance, if there's a Bris Milah in the Shul, happens to be there's a whole discussion as to how much in the Shul is it. So, for instance, here, when we have a 7 o'clock minion in this room, and the Brises are usually around 7 o'clock in the upstairs room, so is that the same Shul? So generally the psak is if the baby or is in, or if the it is imminent that the bris is happening, then yes. But if the baby ain't here and the bari simcha ain't here, then that's not the same thing. If a chosan is considered, what was that?
The caterer's here.
A caterer. Ain't no bris of the ain't no caterer, right? There's a discussion about the balei abris have to be around. The balei abris have to. If the moel is here, yes, ain't achinami. If the moel himself is already here. Sometimes that'll happen because the moel will daven early, in an earlier minute, which one has to always look out for the moel. Jews are very excited about seeing. You know, they say the joke goes that I heard this many years ago, that there were three brachas which come in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, apocryphally, naturally. And the first is the tefillah of Aleinu. And the tefillah says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you made me a tefillah that everybody's rushing out for. Look at this, there's the workday, there's the train, there's so many things. I'm at the end of the service. Everybody's leaving for me. What, you know, how's that fair? So Hashem says, don't worry, I'll give you a time where on Yomim Noraim, in the middle of the Chazaras HaShatz, you will have the prime spot where everybody's going to prostrate themselves in front of you. Aleinu L'Shaveach. Then the Baruch of Asher Yotzah comes around Gosh Baruch and says, Hashem, you made me a bracha that people say as they leave the restroom. It says that's the, you know, the lowest point in time. So Gosh Baruch says, don't worry, I'm going to give you a bracha Asher Yotzah at the show of brachas. Asher Yotzah is Adon Mitzalma. And then Tachanun Frank comes around Gosh Baruch and says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, everybody doesn't want to say me. They'll find a yard site of anybody not to say you. So Gosh Baruch says, don't worry, I'll give you 2 days a year where people will relish saying you in certain communities, and they are Yom HaAtzmaut and Yom Yerushalayim. So, unfortunately, the story gets at a certain feeling we have. You know, how many times do we, you know, we look up and we praise Hashem, the fact that we don't have Tachanun, we're missing the opportunity. So when does it extend beyond the parameters of just these cases? So it happens to be that it is brought down the halacha that there on certain yard sites or hilulas that Tachanun is not said. As an example, take a look in source on the very, very top of page 6 on the left-hand column. And this is the Piskei Tshuvos, who says we're going to start from halfway down, where there's an underline which says Biyuma Dehilula Shel Tzadik. He says Achem Biyuma Dehilula Shel Tzadik. Let's say on a day, and this is on the top left of page 6.
23.
It's to the left of 23. It says Achem Biyuma Dehilula Shel Tzadik, Keshemis Asvim Yachad Anoshim Hanoihim Leora. If you're in a place where there are people who are really, you know, we're really learning from the light of this person, who passed away. And on the yard site, they will light their own candles, and they're very involved in this person's teaching and life. On the day of the yard site, like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is the most classic example. He says, in that case, there ain't noiflin. In that case, they wouldn't do tachanun. However, ach ein lahakia b'chol anir le'el el mishe kabbalah b'yodah l'inhoikein. You shouldn't do this unless you really have a tradition to do such. Zulas labal simcha atzmoi she'eshors b'yodah l'ilomar tachanun b'yom simchos. Unless it's a specific simcha of a person. So, for instance, a person who's a bal simcha of a bris, even though the shul will say it at mincha, he himself wouldn't say it. But in the end of the day, you know, one should be more careful about this. I remember there was many years ago, I was at YU, and they had a Nefesh conference. Nefesh conference, of course, you know, brings together, you know, health professionals from across the country, and it was hosted in YU that particular day, and it happened to be, it was the afternoon of Yom HaAtzmaut. It was very interesting, because the Nefesh crowd is not exactly, you know, the YU crowd. And so it came to, you know, between the sessions, it was incredible. It was a marriage therapy course given by John and Julie Gottman, for those people who know the name. Really unremarkable, the top marriage therapists in the world, you know, live in Washington. Very interesting people. And in between the sessions, there was, there was a mincha. So what happens in mincha, right? So nobody said tachanun, but nobody was upset because it was somebody's hilula and it was Yom HaAtzmaut. So everybody felt happy at this particular mincha. So nobody felt affronted by the fact. So it just, but it, nonetheless, the Piskei Teshuvos says unless you really have a connection or a tradition to a particular individual, we shouldn't just be dropping mincha at the drop of a tachanun at the drop of the hat just because of a particular individual. Unless you really, really have a connection to that individual. Now, what are we doing? Let's come back to it. We've gone through a number of the halachas. What are we actually trying to accomplish? Meaning, what is the point of all of this? This is the full circle. We've talked about position. We've talked about time, venue, night, Mondays and Thursdays. The days we don't, this is sort of an overview survey. But what are we actually trying to accomplish? So the Zohar, on the more Kabbalistic side of things, actually is quoted by the Nefesh HaChaim, and many of the Meforshim on the Tachanun say that what is actually happening is, I mean, it's a bit of a scary thing. He says that it's almost like a person is handing themselves over, so to speak, to a me'ein misa. A person sort of putting themselves in a position where they're saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we are so frail, we are so fragile. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if it weren't for your help, we wouldn't have any leg to stand upon. So it's a moment in the day we recognize our own fragility. That's what's happening over here, where we're almost handing ourselves over to the way it's described in the words of the Nefesh HaChaim in Racham Veloshnis is Tzorech Lachavim Biru'uso Delibo Ki'ilu Niftar Min Ha'olam Lagamre. A person should be thinking as if they're no longer here. You know, those can evoke very powerful, very terrifying feelings. That's what a person should be doing. It realigns the wheels when a person thinks about that. You know, what one's supposed to be trying to achieve. Rav Soloveitchik, on a more accessible level, talks about this in Worship of the Heart. He has his comment in Source 25. He's at the conclusion of the prayer, he takes three steps backwards as parting from one's master. The person who has completed the Amidah falls on his face in the supplication. This institution of Tachanun, or Nefilas Apayim, stresses the annihilation of the man's being. Man lowers himself to the dust and negates his existence. The words of supplication spoken during the Nefilas Apayim highlight the tragic character of the pleader. God, do not rebuke me in your anger. From this plea emerge all the terrors of the miserable and unfortunate person who bears in his bosom perpetual grief and disgrace. The one who supplicates regrets his sin and calls for help. This formula of entreaty laden with the pain of shame is especially prominent at the moment of vidui, or confession. The practice of many communities to recite vidui before Nefilas Apayim in the Nusach Svarit communities is not without point. The essence of confession is the demolition of pride and arrogance, leading to a catharsis of the soul that lifts its eyes from the depths of filth. So he's saying it's not just a free get out of jail free card. It comes with contrition. It comes with a person saying, you know, what am I doing? What have I done? What do I deserve? That's what a person's doing. And by the way, that's so private, which is why you put your face down. Right? There's the time where you have the moment where you say, Hashem, what am I doing? Do I deserve this? Am I really? This is the time where one has a really private moment with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And finally, the last, and I thought this was a very meaningful idea, which is brought in the name of the Saba of Kelm, the Alter of Kelm, from one of his students, is really a remarkable idea in Source 26, and with this we close. Inyanin filas apayim, achara tvila, bir lefi ma shehuva b'chavas levavos, mechosid echad sheachara tvila, omar Ribbono Shel Olam, bikashti zeh vzeh, v'goymer. So he says, where a chassid, he quotes the Chavos Levavos, who says that a particular righteous individual, at the end of his davening, turned to Hashem and said, look, Hashem, I just asked you for a lot. I on the bucket list was a yellow Lamborghini. There was, there was season tickets to the Blackhawks. You know, there was a whole bunch of things that were really important to me, right? But at the end of the day, Akash Baruch Hu, I recognize that Atzoscha is Toiva Me'atzosi. That your plan is better than my plan, because I think I know what's best for me. But I don't always know what's best for me. You know, it's like the child who, the three-year-old who comes to the parent and says, Dad, I'd like to get a automatic chainsaw. So Dad says, maybe next birthday, right? Meaning, and the child says, but Dad, you love me. But sometimes the dad's not always willing to give the child the automatic chainsaw because he has a well-corroborated history of destroying the house with a mere baseball bat. Right? So there's certain times where we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we don't always know what's best for us. We put our hand down, we say, let us fall on the hand of Hashem. Hashem, we just had a long laundry list of important things in our lives. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at the end of the day, we submit to the fact that you should choose what is best for us. And that's in the Tefillah Sabayim, a very personal response to the Tefillah which we did daven, which it comes back full circle. Why is it that it's an extension of the Shemona Esrei? Because what is the essence of the Shemona Esrei? It's Bakasha. When a person asks Hashem and relies on Hashem, at the end of that, our conclusion is a conclusion of humility. We put our heads down, we say, Hashem, it's up to you. Metz Hashem, all of our Tefillahs should be answered, as we just said yesterday, L'tayva, as you ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'tayva. Rabbi Chanan ben Akash Amar Atzal HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'zakoyz Is Yisrael Lefich Av Yebolem Torah Mitzvah Shenemar Anecha Vetz Zaman Tzikoy Yagdil Torah V'Yadir.